Out in 2003 and put this thing out. It went out all over the network everywhere, and so a lot of people liked it. A lot of people have saved it, and they'd call and ask me questions about it, but I'll just explain. Well, that's what's happening right now, and I'd show them where it was doing it. He said as he puffed up his head, the 19th century vision of the time of God's wrath. In the early part of the 1800s, or perhaps as early as 1742, that was when Morgan came along. The tribulation period began to be divided into two sections. See, you couldn't even find before 1742. You couldn't even find it. A nice little thing like that with two sections on it, you know. First 1,260 days, first 1,260 days. How come all these preachers all these years never caught on to that? How come they never went back and looked? How come they never, you know, we're big on studying church history, and I love church history, and we ought to be. But you ought to go back and see how the doctrine's changed. Because you can lay them out to who did it and why they did it and everything else, and then you can say, well, I'm not going to believe that. But instead, you teach it for so long, you don't want to be embarrassed, and I don't want to be embarrassed either. That's why I didn't preach it publicly out of all the churches until 1992. Now, the first half was a time of peace, and the second half was a time of trouble. So it was only natural that the last 1,260 days came to be known as the Great Tribulation. They said, well, there's two halves of it, but the first one is a half, it's a peace. And they said the last one is one of Great Tribulation, and that's 1,260 days. And they said, I'm sure that's why they divided. I said, why are you sure? They said, well, it just makes sense. It makes sense to him and to other people, but it don't make sense to me. Because the first half of it, that's what gave me all the trouble. I said, how am I going to get that peace in there? I said, it don't fit. So one day, I was down in Texas, and this was when I'd first met Leonard. This is when he kissed me on both sides of the cheek, which he'll deny us, but he did. And I was feeding him as much as I could, as fast as I could, and he insisted. I stayed over his house, he and Cindy both. And I spent the whole time I was over there talking, and my throat was raw at night when I'd go over to church. And the first question he asked me was, he says, where's that time of peace? I mean, how's that going to happen? I said, there ain't none. He said, why not? I said, because the first 1,335 days of tribulation period has already been fulfilled. So I spent the whole week teaching him that 60 weeks of Daniel's year, 70 weeks. Now, this interpretation was justified using Matthew 24, 21, 22. Matthew 24, 21, 22. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no nor ever shall be, and except those days should be shortened. That's the shortening. In other words, there's going to be the last 1,185 days where it's really going to be super duper bad. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. For the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. I really believe God is going to protect his children. And I try not to get too emphatic about that because it's a sign of cowardice. And I'm a coward. You know, I've been through two wars, but I'm a coward. And you don't see me running around on the battlefield trying to protect people and carrying them to safety. You see me digging down deeper and hoping they don't find me in the bush. So the truth of the matter is, this thing here, God's going to protect us. So I tell that to people for this reason. It relieves them. And I do believe he is. But he may not protect some. You say, how do you figure that? I don't have to figure. He may not. And so I just tell people, just if you get killed, then you can get down there right around the throne. And if that turns people off, well, then maybe I never should have told them in the first place. He says, I certainly agree that there will be tribulation during the last 1,260 days of the tribulation period, but the intensities of it great having been shortened. I think that period of time that's is going to include that a little season. I think that you may have a little bit of tribulation start before the 1,335 days, but the most intense part of it is already preset, and it'll be for the last 1,185 days of the tribulation period. He says, but we'll be confined to the pouring out of the vials of wrath during the latter portion of it, because during a period of some 45 days, I do not believe the archangel stands up for Israel until the Antichrist is sitting on the Temple Mount in his place, Apidan. Now, when I discovered that, I was just jumping up and down. I was just crying. I said, oh, praise God. That's not the temple. Can't be the temple. Never has been used for the temple. Never will be used for the temple. It's an Apidan. And an Apidan is a fortress. It's a command post. And that's when the Antichrist goes back and sets up his command post. That's what it means. You say, well, how come nobody ever taught you that? Maybe they didn't look it up. I don't know. That's why I wanted to have this school where we looked at the book and you all would look it up and do this and that. I didn't want to have it forever, but the thing was, I wanted y'all to know, you need to check this stuff out. And you need to check it out for yourself, because then it means a whole lot more to you and you're a whole lot more certain of it. And you don't have to wonder, did he shift that around to his way of thinking? Because I have done that, and I've learned not to do it, because I just didn't know how to accept the things that God taught me. But I'm pretty good at it now, because God made me pretty good at it. And it's a command post. And so I did a lot of research on that, found a lot of pictures. David and the rest of them, they sat on command posts. And whenever they would get to a high place where they would have a battle, the Israelis or any other command team, any other nation, the leading nation, they'd want to get up on the top of the highest elevation, so the people would have to come up at them. It's a whole lot easier to pick people off coming up a hill. That's why when I was in Vietnam, the Green Berets always found a little area, and they would clear it out all the way around a higher elevation. And then they would get up, and what they always picked out, they'd find a little plateau, and they were over there. And they'd pick it out, and the 1 and 2 Corps was between myself, between Trang and Pleiku. And you'd go over there, and they would already have chopped the hillsides down. They had made them even steeper all the way around it. They had used the dirt up on the top to make a defensive wall that was built around the upper portion. It might be a small monadnock. That's what Mount Nebo is. A small monadnock, that's a large monadnock, or a great big one. That's what Mount Nebo is. It's a monadnock. And so then they would make the sides even more difficult to climb. And then when the VC attacked at night, they knew the VC wouldn't attack to at night if there was a full moon or if it was cloudy. So that was part of my job. Part of my job was to give them the phases of the moon when it came up, when it would be full, and also when there would be cloudy clouds in the valley. I always kid you about that Mount Nebo. And it does mean a lot when you do have clouds on top of the covered top of the mountain. And so I did that, and I got to where I could do it for everybody over there. And so we had a unit there at the Trang, and we got to warning all of them, ahead of time with the different things. And sure enough, if you wonder why the casualty count was so high over there for the VC, and we had a high one. But it was because, we were prepared for them when they came. And they didn't know what a network we had behind there that was telling them what's going to happen. And they would always attack on a full moon. Of course, if it was cloudy and a full moon, well, they'd attacked. But if it was a clear sky and they had a full moon, you could see them coming up the side of the mountain. And if you didn't have any clouds, then they would attack if it was a full moon. But if you had a full moon or not, it didn't make any difference if you had clouds over them, because they would attack under the clouds, and they were very, very difficult to see. It was like going through a Halloween tunnel or something like that. And half the time, you couldn't even see the sights on the end of your gun, and you always had to have a little thing up there, light thing that you looked at, because we were using M16s, and I wish it had some AK-13s. Man, those were Soviet weapons, but the M16 was a good weapon, and it was very accurate, and we always had spotlights going down the mountain all around it. And what would happen was we'd wait till they got almost almost up to the top, maybe about three-quarters of the way up. Then we'd cut loose, and we'd cut loose, and when they'd be piling up and fighting and behind the bodies that were ahead, laying down and shooting over them. If you started shooting down at the bottom of the mountain, they would build up, then they would try to come up the side of the mountain, but you couldn't kill as many of them. because they would pile up down at the bottom of the mountain. So it was a time. Now, don't get the idea I was a hero in all this. I'm a natural-born coward. And my dad would always look under the bed at night, see if somebody was under there. I picked up that habit, too. And when I came back, I would always wake up with a 45 in this hand and an M16 in this hand after I came back from Vietnam. And once in a great while, I do that again. And it's real in my hands. And I still carry some things from there that I wish I could get rid of. And they're getting real bad now. I had a... I'll be talking to someone, and I'll have this object in my hands, and I'll be carrying on a conversation with them. They'll be right there with me. And then all of a sudden, it will be just as real to me, just as shouting, you know, and I'll be taking this thing in this hand, and I'll be showing how this fits in here, and all of a sudden it all disappears. And there I am right where I was to start with, and it doesn't seem any different. It's crazy, but it ain't making me crazy, and I still remember some scripture. So I'm hanging over here, and you'll just have to do with a half-wit preacher till the Lord comes. But now, what's so important about this Apennine, the command post? Claiming to be God just prior to Armageddon. This is after the rapture. The rapture occurs when he comes on that Temple Mount, and he claims to be God, and he himself thinks he is God, and that is when the great part of the tribulation period begins. I mean the worst part, horrible part, where there's never been a time like it before in the history of the man. Now, that's the abomination of desolation. What is desolation? It means absolute destruction. That is the part where all Hades breaks loose. That's the great part of it. And that begins for the last 45 days of the tribulation period. After the rapture, after which Israel is delivered, everyone found written in the book. The rapture occurs, all the saved go up. There are some Israelis left, but they're not saved. I'm sorry if it sounds like a second chance, but you're not going to catch me blaming God for anything. And they do get but they have heard the testimony of the witnesses. The witnesses have testified to them. During the time that they were there, they were probably too young. You say, well, God will go ahead and take them anyway. I'm not so sure. In any case, the people that will be left there will be given an opportunity to believe the word of God, which they have already heard from the 144,000 that were raptured out on the seventh trumpet, and they will be everyone found written in the book. Now, the question I have never been able to settle in my own mind and heart, have I described that book accurately? Is it the book that is in the Malachi, the book just before? Is that the book of Malachi where in the last chapter he describes a horrible time coming on the earth? And then in the last verses of the chapter before it, he talks about a book of remembrance. And I wonder, I don't know. But I think about it and I say, well, how does that affect you? Well, it doesn't affect me at all. Well, why is it in there and why are you concerned about it? Why do you? What do you want to do with it? I just want to tell them what I just told you. Because you can't figure all this stuff out, or at least I haven't been able to. But there are some things in there. The Archangel Michael stands up in the last chapter, in the 11th chapter of Daniel, and man alive, there's a time like there never has been found before. And you just go right across the page, the last chapter of Malachi, and go right on up. And you'll discover that there is a book of remembrance written. And it's not called the book of life, but it is called a book of remembrance. And I think there are some Jews that come through the tribulation period that get saved in that last part after the 144,000 are raptured out when the abomination of desolation stands up. Now, all this fits together. And believe me, it wasn't easy to fit it together, but I did not fudge in any way. Now let's take number 6. Daniel 11:45-12:1. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas, Dead Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, in the glorious holy mountains. That's definitely Mount Moriah. You see, there are some gimmies in the Bible. And what you've got to do is take the gimmies to help to understand the things that you've got to understand what the gimmies are, or you cannot understand what these other things are. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. That's when he seized over in the 19th chapter of Revelation, he seized along with a false prophet, and they're thrown in a lake of fire, they're thrown in a fire of brimstone, and it says that's the last of them. Yet later on, the Antichrist is not the Antichrist, but the devil. He's apparently thrown in there with them, and so he gets out. But the other two, they stay there forever. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people Israel. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. Now, I think that's what the last chapter of Malachi is talking about. And I think just before it, the last several verses of the chapter before the last chapter of Malachi, and it's right across the page usually from where I just read in Daniel 12 and 1, Daniel 11:45 to 12:1, and at that time shall thy people be delivered, everyone that shall be written in the book. In those verses just before it in Malachi, I know they're not consecutive because Daniel's book was written in 600 B.C., Malachi at the very end. But I know you can't go back and say, well, this is context. But I believe it is the same period. And I believe that that's talking about a book of remembrance. But whether or not it's a book of remembrance, I think that it refers to people who are saved during that last 45 days. And I believe that they will be saved and they will go back and be in the millennial reign. And I don't know exactly how this is all going to work out in there, but I do know it. I believe it will. So that's all I can tell you on that. So when does the Great Tribulation come on earth in the tribulation period? In Revelation 12:6-17, God gives John a preview, an overview of what will happen from the opening of a sixth seal to the pouring out of the contents of the seventh vial of his wrath. However, the true wrath of God does not begin until the pouring out of the first vial of wrath in Revelation 16:1. So you go back to Revelation 16:1 and you read that. Then you go back and you read the preview of his coming wrath. You go all the way down to verse 17. You take a look at all that and you say, well, is that the period? Well, yes, but it doesn't kick in until about verse 15 or 16, that's the last 45 days of the tribulation period. And said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. Now here's why I believe that primarily. For the great day of his wrath is come, who shall be able to stand? Now, that word for wrath is not the same word for wrath that you find over in the 16th chapter of Revelation. The 16th chapter of Revelation, that's wrath. That's it. And this down here is a different word for wrath. And so you've got one of these back there from somewhere that I did not too long ago, and maybe a year ago. And it describes all that and goes into it. And I think I saw it laying on the counter when I left over at the house. So I'll try to do that next time. And I'll start with the preview of his coming wrath on verse 6, on page 6. And so I have finished, I have finished exactly on time. 2 minutes late. That's exactly on time.